I want to give you now a connecting link between the various therapies which have existed and auditing.
You understand that when one uses this word therapy, he uses it very, very advisedly. Any complete understanding of existence could be characterized as a therapy. But a therapy intimates something medical or something that has to do with the correction of malfunction rather than the correction of living. Therapy rather smells of iodoform. And as we come along the line, we realize more and more that an understanding of life was what was missing, not a therapy. Here you had individuals being raised up arduously by a society to believe many things, and this happening in many societies, and having raised up his head and attained his growth and stature on a certain diet of agreement, discovers in, quote, real life, unquote, that these agreements do not hold. And here you have mainly the difficulty which societies have. They take a child of 2, 3, 4, and they start pouring it to him with fairy tales. And if you were to take 2, 3, 4-year-old child who has had this as a steady 3 times a day amusement, you will discover that the individual is rather convinced that he is living in a world which is inhabited by witches and dragons and so forth. Well, now, this doesn't happen to even vaguely approximate reality. The world he is living in Greece, for instance, consisted of temples and nice-looking courtesans and good, thorough, strong, willed athletics and occasional wars and political chicanery and a lot of things like that. That was the reality of the time, and yet the Greek child was brought up, and very early in the Greek civilization it was more or less relegated to the child on myths and things and stuff, and he'd probably go down to the sea and expect somebody to jump out of the sea and say hello or something like that. And he'd get older, and this wouldn't happen. And that was probably his Sunday school training, you might say, that Zeus or Agamemnon or somebody was about to pat him on the shoulder and say, good boy, and he goes on through to the age of 80, and nobody ever pats him on the shoulder or gives him a flick of its tail and says, good boy. And this rather violates his reality. So in modern times, we find a young boy raised up in a world where he believes there was something essentially very heroic about hitting Green Beach 1, and that Superman triumphs over all. And he finds out mainly that Gene Autry and Roy Rogers can shoot endlessly at people without hitting them. And this is a reality. Now, that's a very extreme reality, isn't it? A very extreme one. I suppose after a while they'll have to get down to where they only get a 4-year-old to swallow this. But right now they swallow it up to the age of about 12. So we get this as a reality. Now the individual goes through school and he comes out and he finds the world is made mainly of machines, of cars, movies, of lipstick, and that its amusements are rather narrow, since the cops frown on people getting shot. He finds out that he shoots at anybody with any accuracy whatsoever, he'll hit them. And that bullets hurt. This is one of the most astonishing facts. And he discovers that his main efforts in existence have never been pictured for him in his, quote, to coin a cliche, formative years. And it seems as though somebody around is obsessed with the idea of giving somebody a false reality during his, quote, formative years. And we find every society working at this, hammer and tongs, trying to build this up. Now, I've spoken about a very flagrant formative reality. Very flagrant. I mean, cowboys and so forth. The kid can sort of laugh this off. But how about others, such as justice? If you're good and obedient and so on and mind your P's and Q's and polish up the handle of the big front door or something of the sort, you will eventually amount to something in this world. How about the fact that if you save your penny a day, you will eventually become a millionaire or something? How about other formative realities, you might say? Well, they think that there's justice, that there's loyalty, every part of the sex to know scale. There's a formative reality given the child, and which he is going to find violated the moment that he steps forth into the universe at large. Now, the most lost person would be the one which was the most protected from reality. Isn't that so? The most lost person. Who never had a chance to size up reality until he was practically fresh out of sizer upper. How about that fellow? Well, how about keeping somebody in university till he's 24, 26, or the optimum age today, 39? And then turn them loose. And what did they find? They find that General Motors has very, very little to do with the Glee Club. And strikes and so forth, and they find out that you make deals. It isn't all run on the best solution, it's run on the best deal, really. Now, one of the most horrible examples of this that I know of was a young officer who had been 2 years to the United States Naval Academy, and he had been brought up exclusively on the diet of fiction, which showed that all officers were bold and noble and very trustworthy and extremely truthful, and they were generous, you know, and that there was a brotherhood of officers. And he got to the Naval Academy, he found everybody was cutting everybody else's throat, and the fellow who was winding up as number one in the class was a grind who had glasses 5 feet thick, and that this person would finally wind up to be chief of naval operations if he stayed close to Washington and never fought a battle. And this is the reality which he faced. He faced the reality that there was no camaraderie, that there was no brotherhood of officers, and that the way you got ahead, even in the Naval Academy, was to climb over the heads of your classmates and turn them in and put them in a brace and so forth. Broke his heart. He was brought back in during the war and was given a commission and was put in command of a very small vessel. And he was pretty well off of his rockers. I know this case very well because it was my squadron that he reported to as a small guard ship. And we had to take him off of it. And so on. When he landed after delivering the ship, his crew lined up on the dock in a complete mutiny. They wouldn't go back aboard, and so on. This man was so upset by this time that he didn't know, actually, a tree from a telephone pole. I mean, he was just all fouled up. What his break of reality amounted to was simply a complete miseducation. He'd been thoroughly raised up to live in one world and found himself living in another. You're all raised up to believe that the cop down here stands for law and order. Well, that's interesting. It's an interesting theory. But the truth of the matter is the deterioration of the society is utterly dependent upon the deterioration of police. And it's the police forming a bridge between the criminal and enforcing laws on all citizens, which should regulate just a few citizens. It's police that cave societies in the final analysis. No fascism, for instance, can come into existence unless the criminal element are turned into police. The police and the criminal element eventually switch around to where the criminal element is the police. And this natural sort of a progressive thing And yet you have these little kids walking across the street down here, and they're taught to look up on the subject of law and order. Now, a little bit later in life, they find out that somebody murders their wife or their dog or something of the sort, and they go down to get themselves some justice. And they find that they're the ones that are questioned. And they find out that this happens and that happens and something other happens. And it's all very clumsy and it's very stupid, and that you really can't have any justice. And you find out that far from being law and order and a bill of rights and that sort of thing, you go to any attorney in this society today and ask this attorney whether or not you should engage in any suits. And he won't have anything to do with it. You're going to sue. Well, that's... something he isn't prepared to stand up to, because it means that you'd go to court. And that's taking an awful chance. He'll always tell you that. That's always a fact. So if you can't even get attorneys to go close to court, there must be something there about law, order, and justice. Now, here we have this continuous break of reality, which is all I'm trying to talk about here, just in the basis of education and livingness. Now, one of the interesting things in the society this time is something which we possibly consider very good. I notice nearly everyone considers this very, very fine. Child labor laws. That's good. Heck, it is. It makes a kid depend upon somebody supporting him. That's number one. This cuts down his freedom most alarmingly and markedly if this child can't go out and get himself a job. Supposing he's in a home that he finds rather intolerable. In any society which lack child labor laws, let's say he's only 11 years old or something like that, he could shove off and go down the road and get a job. But not in this society. He's got to stay there and take it. It gets him accustomed, these child labor laws, get him accustomed to being dependent before he is independent. And these labor laws make it impossible for him to work. Now, he starts in life being very happy to work, very happy to exert effort just for its own sake, and his family and child labor laws educate him out of it very thoroughly and then release him on the world and then kick him around because he won't work. Because he becomes a juvenile delinquent, or because he bums around by the time he's out of high school, 18, 19, so on. What's this but a complete reversal of reality? The individual is taught that he mustn't put forth any effort, that he can't work, and then all of a sudden we throw him into the society and we say, work, and your life depends upon it. Well, it's no wonder that he gets rather sad. Truth of the matter is, today, the reality which exists is a fairly good reality if you are not completely misoriented in it. And there, essentially, is what has happened to your preclear. He's all set to play one kind of a game. He's all set and trained to play football and goes out and finds himself playing soccer or scrimmage or something. He just doesn't know this game. And he goes on in a sort of an apathy of unknowingness from there on. Well, this is your preclear. Whatever else he says, he believes that one level of reality should exist and has never found it existing. Here we have today a rather fictional society. And you'll find one of the interesting universes to audit out of a preclear is the fictional universe. This fictional universe has widened its gap from reality to an enormous point, to such a point that it's a wonder to me that anybody can ever find enough common meeting ground to read and understand the stories which are written today. They just have no bearing on reality at all. People don't act that way. The values just aren't that way. And if it weren't for the fact that a fictional universe itself had been built up, which very, very carefully plots itself forward through the society. You know, we educate a bunch of people to believe in this kind of story, and therefore we can go on publishing this kind of story. See? If it weren't for that bridge mechanism, nobody would read any of the fiction being released today, I'm sure. Because it's just, life doesn't run that way. Well, all due respect to that, it may sound to you like I'm merely engaging on a little bit of a tirade on the subject here, but I'm not. I'm trying to demonstrate to you that your reality break is the most severe and important arresting mechanism on the standpoint of perception and on the standpoint of communication. Where your preclear has had a very difficult time of it in trying to adjust himself to existence, having been trained to meet another existence entirely, we discover that his communication line is poor and his affinity line is very poor. And your task is actually the same task as psychotherapy, confessions, and everything else have elected themselves to have for the last 2, 3, 4, maybe 8,000 years, which is trying to get somebody to face reality. Now, if we have societies obsessed with training people to false realities, then, of course, we're going to have difficulty in getting somebody to, quote, face reality. First place, we'd have to find out what reality was before we could get anybody to face it and then discover what was wrong with it, if any. Now, there's a direct coordination between the amount of reality break between his formative years and his actual existence in the preclear and his ability to see a tree out here. His ability to avoid running into rocks. His ability to experience weather without becoming ill, and so on. There's a direct coordination between this reality break and his ability to see, his ability to feel, his ability to experience, because his ability to see, feel, and experience depends upon the level of agreement he has with his environment, which is composed of trees, rocks, people, customs, amusements, so forth. So let's see this as a very clean picture here. We're trying to get people into closer contact with existence. We're trying to increase their perceptions and so forth. And yet this individual was very thoroughly trained to see quite something else. And now you come along as an auditor, or you would come along as a priest way back when, or earlier than that, you'd come along as a medicine man, and we would have somebody saying, oh, everything is ugug, and so forth, and you'd say, well, this is a very funny thing, the old tribe's got meat, and so forth, and here this fellow's sitting in here, not going out for the hunt or doing anything practical, so forth. He's sitting there saying everything is ugug, and it's not. We obviously see that it's not. Now, what are we going to do for him? And that was the problem of the witch doctor, and that was the problem of the Asclepian priest, and that is the problem of the Catholic priest, and, of course, he has an additional problem, how many bucks that he can get into the coffers. But, of course, everybody more or less had this problem. He had it more extremely than others. The confessionals. You know, if you could just get enough information on everybody, boy, could you tax them. Anyway, that's blackmail in other categories. So that really wasn't therapeutic. We have to get along to actually right on up to Freudian analysis to get this subject being looked at with some degree of security that somebody was going to do something about exactly what was happening. And now, from Freudian analysis, we went through a tremendous rack around and a vanishment from reality as that done by Jung and so on. We got right up here into modern times. And we get into Dianetics, which was a series of mechanisms to understand reality and look at it more closely. And we have Scientology, and it puts people in fairly intimate contact with it by simply using the very mechanisms by which reality takes place, which is quite a triumph in itself. We've just gone above the problem of getting somebody to say yak instead of ug about reality. Now, where do we find the coordination of all these various things? What is the general coordination of the track? What's the tie-in all up and down the line of psychotherapy? Whether you were a witch doctor or an Asclepian priest or a father confessor or anybody else, you found an individual not seeing or feeling or experiencing what other people were seeing, feeling, and experiencing. And you tried to bring this individual over to the level of seeing, feeling, and experiencing more what other people said could be felt, seen, and experienced. Now, you see that? There is the tie-in all the way up the line. This fellow runs up and down the village green, screaming, the Indians are coming, the Indians are coming, run, run, run. But it happens that this is 1931. And that, of course, doesn't agree with reality at all. And so, naturally, somebody would call in, somebody like a priest or a witch doctor or an auditor or something, and say, let's see if we can't get this fellow a little less unhappy about these non-existent Indians. Now, there is where the society itself takes a view of the subject. It's when it becomes a public display, when it becomes an outrage, so on. So up, really, till very recent times, namely 4 years ago, all psychotherapy was devoted to was trying to cut down the amount of social misconduct which got on the nerves of the other parts of society. Well, that isn't our goal today. So we've graduated another step. We're not interested in cutting down this type of misconduct or something of the sort. We're actually going from another level. We're finding out that it's possible to have people be far better and more able than people could be before. Well, let's get them into that higher echelon. But nevertheless, all that we are doing is well-linked clear back into the past. Now, I want to show you just one little mechanism here. Latter part of the 19th century, we had Freud working very hard on something called transference. Show you that you're very definitely and positively related to the past. He says about transference, instead of remembering certain of the feelings and states of mind of his previous life, he reproduces them, lives through again such of them as, by means of what is called transference, may be made effective in opposition against the physician and the treatment. You'd never recognize it. He's talking about the primitive method of erasing a lock. In some kind of a way, he felt that somebody could be put into another state, preferably into some kind of a state where he could pass through an experience several times, and then could be nebulously handled in some other direction. This is awfully vague, isn't it? But nevertheless, was a definite feeling in the direction of, an individual should be able to tolerate more viewpoints than he is tolerating. And if Mr. Freud had pursued this more exclusively, he would have come up with a lot of interesting things. But nevertheless, he came up with something interesting. He came up with something interesting. He's talking about these people don't agree with reality. He's probably the first one that said this strongly and effectively. He said people don't agree with reality. Well, that was an enormous advance over the witch doctor. Freud didn't say what reality was, how you define reality, what the mechanics of reality were. He just said that people didn't agree with reality and this was what was wrong with them, and they had ideas that other things made up reality. Well, now, we have a definite coordination there as the change of valence manifestation which we run into today. And all of our change of valence mechanisms actually were first felt, not understood, not articulated, on this thing called transference. Now, an individual's ability to transfer was the most important thing that Freud had. Now, what is this transference? A fascinating thing, transference. He tried to define it. He went on and on trying to define it, too, by the way. And he never quite got to first base, merely because you never find three analysts ever agreeing on really the definition of transference, so we really have to give it a definition to talk about it. But this had a great deal to do with the various things along the line. Now, the earliest manifestation in psychotherapy that the society objected to, the very earliest, way, way, way back, was that people became things and wouldn't unbecome them. You know, a woman is walking down the street and she tells everybody she is a deer. And she starts to behave like one and eat grass and so on. And the magician, he gets upset about this. The witch doctor gets upset about this because this is one of his clientele. And she's walking down the street and she firmly believes she is a deer. Well, his main worry was the fact that people became things and couldn't unbecome them. That was the problem of the witch doctor. You find if you associate much with barbaric tribes, they're terrified of this. Somebody is going to become obsessed, mostly with the idea that he is something or is possessed by something, but he's going to become something. And here, as we came along, we found out that Freud started to use this mechanism to become things, only all he wanted the individual to become actually was the analyst. He wanted to transfer the patient. Now, he found out there was a coordination in this, too. And he said, however, about his patients that he couldn't do anything about, their behavior, this very rough group of hysteria, anxiety, and obsessional neurosis, neurotics, their behavior during the attempt to cure them confirms this suspicion. They produce no transference and are, therefore, inaccessible to our efforts not to be cured by us. In other words, he just wiped out and said psychoanalysis couldn't touch people who couldn't become things. Well, the basic problem with the witch doctor was that people became things unpredictably. And we find the latter part of the 19th century, the main problem was that people couldn't become things. And today, we have the same manifestations, only we have the mechanisms of it. We have the winning valences, as in Book One. We have, in Scientology, the ability to be. The ability to be and unbe, to freely be, to change beingness, is actually based upon the ability to face realities, to assume new realities, to change old realities. If you can't get your preclear to move out of the frame of reference of his formative reality, the world he expected to live in and never arrived in because it didn't exist, if you can't get him to bridge that over into living in the world he's living in and enjoying it, you've taken him no place. And you'll never get him from this formative reality stage. The fairy tale as a child, Gene Autry, and so forth, cowboys and Indians, up through teenage, into facing reality as it is. You'll never make that bridge unless you can promote his ability to be things and unbe them. A preclear has to be able to be and unbe freely, or he cannot change. If he cannot change, he cannot change his considerations of existence. If he can't change his considerations of existence, why, your job is defeated right there. There's different coordination, as we just read there, about these people produce no transference. In other words, they couldn't be things, and therefore couldn't be helped by analysis. Now, that shows you the society more or less inverted. The witch doctor, the Asclepian schools, and so forth, their main worry is that people became things and wouldn't unbe them. Well, the truth of the matter is, your problem is more of the order of the witch doctors. People are being things, but they can't unbe him. But your question as an auditor is, what the devil are they being? Because the society is now inverted to a degree where this is even hidden. She doesn't come down the street anymore saying, I am a deer. She slithers down the street, hiding it very close to her chest. Whatever she is, Lord knows. But it certainly is nothing that has any real connection with what we call reality. So we have a bridge straightforward. We're trying to do more or less the same thing and a great deal more.